How do you navigate communication in a changing landscape where digital and traditional media coexist, where demographics are shifting, and a new generation is on the cusp of influencing the workplace and the world? What is success in digital communication? And will humans still be relevant in a world where artificial intelligence is on the rise? We tackle these and more with Mr. Shafiq Jamal, Principal of Jamal Communications in Vancouver, Canada. Mr. Jamal has more than 26 years in public relations, crisis communication, disaster preparedness and recovery, and reputational risk management. He has handled communication strategies for corporate restructuring, operational efficiency, mergers and acquisitions, hostile takeovers, change management, corporate identity changes, and new corporate vision and direction. He has worked in agriculture, oil and gas, technology, telecommunications, retail, real estate, healthcare, transportation, life sciences, financial services, marine transport, hospitality, and consumer goods and services. Prior to starting his own consulting practice, he was Senior Vice President and Managing Director of Weber Shandwick's Vancouver office. He has also held senior positions with Edelman Worldwide, the Retail Council of Canada, Best Buy Canada, Hill & Knowlton, Hogan & Associates, and Wilcox Group. And I'm Raj Chandran, Executive Director of Verifluenti Communication. Thank you for making the time. Perhaps we can start with a very basic question. How can a practitioner develop a communication management strategy?
Well, thanks, Rajan. Thanks for having me on your show. Really appreciate it. I think that practitioners, the first thing they need to do is to have a facilitated working session. And the reason you need to do this is because you need to get alignment from the executive team as to what the communication strategy should look like. Before you go ahead and prepare it. I think as we are continuing to find these days, you know, for example, the marketing and communications disciplines are being joined. You know, now there are postings for the director of marketing and communications or VP of marketing communications. And I think that a facilitated session allows for you, the practitioner, to ensure there's alignment between the senior executives. You know, a well-run session will emerge with a SWOT analysis, a strengths, weakness, opportunities, threats.
Of course.
But I like to take it further, what I call driving and restraining forces session as well. And it's akin to, it was developed by Kurt Lewin in the 1940s. And the example there is, if you don't focus on the restraining forces, it's like putting air in a flat tire. You will only be able to go so far before you'll have to fill the tire with air again. So you have to really focus on the restraining forces. And I think that's where the hard thinking goes in. You know, the start with why, the Simon Sinek approach has to be part of this as well. And then coming out of that session, the communications practitioner should then look at developing the strategy, the tactics, the key audiences they want to reach, and the sort of, you know, a schedule of content they're going to put out to achieve the messages with those audiences, and of course develop messages to go along with that.
Okay, great. So you're saying the logical starting point would be this facilitated session with executive team members, and that is followed by a more detailed plan that you develop.
Yes, and I think if I can just add to what you just said is that, you know, in this day and age when traditional media continue to shrink, I think it behooves every organization to look at its communications team as its own newsroom. And when they think of themselves in that capacity, you know, I think they'll think of doing things differently. And the newsroom doesn't just have to communicate externally. I find that even to this day, a lot of companies and organizations forget that you should communicate with your internal stakeholders, because after all, they're the best ambassadors for your company.
Oh, absolutely. It's something that is so ignored. You ignore your employees. And as you rightly mentioned, they are your greatest or worst brand ambassadors.
Correct.
And that kind of segues nicely into our next question. How would you describe the importance of digital channels in communication management or public relations?
You know, I like to start that. I do present a fair bit on crisis and issues and reputation management. And there's a famous Warren Buffett quote. It's from many years ago, but it still rings true today, you know, where he said it takes 20 years to build up your profile, you know, your brand. It takes 20 years to build a reputation and only 5 minutes to ruin it. If you think in those terms, you'll think differently. And it's as true when he said it as it is today, because now, you know, in terms of response, or even if you aren't in crisis, but you're trying to build a brand, like, digital channels have become so much more pervasive. And sometimes you may not even be, like, I work with mining companies, and they don't necessarily feel the need to get involved in social. But sometimes a social conversation is happening about them without their knowledge. So, you know, use Seeking Alpha as an example, where investors go and have, you know, robust discussions and posts about a company's performance, etc. And I think that, you know, mining companies now need to start thinking about that. So digital channels become ever more pervasive, become ever more important. If you are in a crisis, speed matters, because that online conversation can happen and proceed without your knowledge, and you will find yourself quickly behind the eight ball if you're not there.
Right, right. And I'm glad you mentioned Warren Buffett. The folksy leader is a personal inspiration for me as well. Now, building off what you just said, you've worked with clients in several industries, and you sort of alluded to this, but are there differences in the extent to which digital communication is embraced in different industries? I mean, some may be more conservative, some may be more open to using digital channels.
Yeah, thanks for that question. I think, like I said, mining companies are a classic example of, you know, they don't necessarily need to be on the more consumer-facing social media, like, you know, whether it's Facebook or Instagram. But, you know, certainly I would think LinkedIn, things like Seeking Alpha, you know, participating in these blogs and forums, these online, you know, forums where investment opportunities are discussed. I think that's would do well to look at that as a place where they can have a profile. Another sector that I find is very conservative is banking, you know, and I think that only now, I'll give an example, you know, I have my banker's with CIBC, and only in the last year has the bank allowed his name to be attached to an email, you know, a regular cadence of emails that he sends once a month about different financial topics. And this only happened in the last year, you know. And so I think people are recognizing that you need to embrace it in different industries in different ways to suit your strategic needs and the needs of your stakeholders as to how they want to be communicated with on issues.
Yeah, thanks. Very logical. So different channels for different industries and different communication needs. That very logical reason apart, would there be some other reasons for the attitude of certain industries to be more conservative? You mentioned oil and gas, well, mining, and that there's oil and gas. Yeah. They tend to not want to be so social. And I expect there are client confidentiality clauses and non-disclosure agreements, right?
Yes, there are. There are both of those things, like you say, confidentiality and non-disclosure. There's competitive reasons as well that have to factor in. And I think, at least from my purview and the companies and organizations that I've worked with, there is this hesitancy, you know, they're risk averse. They're not sure about how to get online, how to engage in the conversation. And, you know, I find this, I used to work at the Retail Council of Canada, and we used to represent, or they do represent, large and small scale retailers across the country. And a lot of time, you know, this is pre-COVID, but I think that there was this hesitancy of how to kind of, you know, get online and you need to do, and what's the roadmap. And then, you know, unfortunately, otherwise, COVID-19, I think, catalyzed the issue for them. They had to get online. They had to figure out how to communicate online. They had to sell online, because otherwise, at least in the early part of the pandemic, they would have lost a lot of sales, and that would have been, you know, not beneficial to many of them.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do digital communication channels play out in terms of engagement with different publics? Are they more efficient than the traditional channels, perhaps more cost effective?
It's a very interesting question. I think that there is still a role for traditional media to be played, particularly if you are trying to use the or leverage the credibility of traditional media to communicate. I think, you know, right now, as I say in my presentations, you know, everyone is a journalist. We have a small, powerful computer at our disposal. You know, it costs $1,000 and upwards. But our mobile phones have become so a key part of our life, and we are on them so much. And I think that what's the first thing you see? If you remember the United Airlines incident as an example, I think David Deo was his name, and he was being dragged off the plane by the authorities. And what did people do? They immediately started filming it, and then that went viral. United Airlines found it in itself in the midst of a crisis of how they had handled this issue with the customer, with the passenger. So I think that, you know, there are requirements that companies need to pay attention to in terms of, okay, how do we engage in social? What is the strategy? How do we prepare for risk and issues management while we're online? It's this, you know, if you have a crisis communications playbook that you had before social media, you now need to refresh it to ensure it contains elements of social media. And how are you going to handle that? And I think this has given rise to, you know, in agencies that I've been working at, we have community managers, and the really good ones are digital natives, and they understand how to communicate online. And to answer your other question, yeah, it is somewhat cheaper to communicate online. You know, traditional media does have its paid placements, if you will.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's that you could stretch your dollar far more with the digital online spend.
Sure, sure. Thank you. Now, with the world going social, and as you mentioned, it's almost become a requirement post-pandemic to have a digital presence. Do you find that because of the clutter in the digital communication landscape that traditional channels might now be more effective at reaching publics because there's less clutter there?
That is a very interesting and thought-provoking question there, Raj. And I think the when you look at the amount of, like you say, the amount of information that is online,
right,
you know, we're consuming data in 140 to 280 characters, truly, right? Yes. We don't, and it was interesting, I use in my presentation, I think there was a study done by MIT in 2015, the average attention span of a human being clocks in at 8.25 seconds. And that of a goldfish clocks in at 9 seconds.
Right.
So you just imagine, you know, we are scroll. I mean, I guess things like TikTok or channels like TikTok have taken off because, you know, of their brevity. I mean, you know, we're so impatient. I was looking at a video on Sunday. It was a minute long, and I went in my head, oh my goodness, it's a minute long. And then I had to give myself a head shake. It's like a minute. It's not that long, you know, but this is how, where we are. So, do you then pivot to using more traditional channels? Yes, it'll depend. It's case by case. But, you know, for example, you know, with the Rogers, I don't know if you're a Rogers client, but with the Rogers outage that that took place a few weeks or a month or so ago, you know, I think the traditional channels might have been interesting to communicate through and share their message. I think I've seen some ads that have come out now with the CEO, Tony Staffieri, talking about, you know, how Rogers is building trust. And because I think that day and a half really knocked it a few pegs down.
Absolutely. And you had mentioned the attention span. You know, I wonder if in the new generation, there's an even shorter attention span because, as you mentioned, they're living on TikTok, and email and Facebook are apparently seen as things of the old generation. Everyone's on Instagram now.
Yes. You know, and I think it's, you know, we've seen texting, of course, was a precursor. You know, millennials and others don't want to, they don't use a phone to actually dial anybody. That's considered, you know, equivalent to the rotary phone. Like, why would I call anybody? I just text them, you know? And so you develop this new shorthand language, right? IRL in real life, you know, YOLO, you only live once. Phone, fear of missing out. I mean, this is the vernacular that they start to use and get more comfortable with. And, you know, it is going to be very interesting for the business world, particularly to see what happens with, you know, millennials and the younger crowd that are coming up and how they will find themselves, how they will comport themselves when they get into leadership positions.
Yeah, Gen Z is very, very interesting, and challenges and opportunities, as you mentioned, which leads to our next question. When conducting digital communication, digital public relations, do you see risks or limitations that practitioners must be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm scared about this. I mean, I'm 51 now, and maybe got another sort of two decades in me to continue on. But I see the challenge being we're living in a content world, and the digital channels, again, going back to 140 to 280 characters or a very condensed attention span, what that means is you cannot provide context. And we live in a time when we need context, right?
Exactly. You know,
sorry, go on, Raj.
Oh, no, I was just saying I was agreeing with you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. And, you know, you look at petitions on change.org, and I'm not going to say I'm the first one that came up with this, but, you know, I use the term clicktivism with my clients because, you know, it is so easy to support a petition on change.org by reading a snippet of information. Are you being presented both sides? I have nothing against change.org, but I don't see the balance in the conversation. I see a viewpoint that is provided, and you're asked to click here to sign your name and support it. And I think that this creates a situation where there's lack of dialogue, there's lack of critical thinking. And, you know, when Mr. Bezos bought Washington Post, I think, and I might be paraphrasing, but he says newspapers are going to become a luxury item. You know, long-form journalism is finding difficulty because people just, I'm sure you've seen many online articles that now talk about estimated reading time, or they will use such and such number of words. And we are now in that frame of mind where we just, you know, we're just consuming it really fast. So the limitations are when you have a complex or a nuanced issue, product, topic, how do you dissect that in 8.25 seconds?
Right. And as you mentioned, the lack of balance in viewpoints and the lack of well-rounded context is certainly both a risk and a limitation, right? And,
yes.
Perhaps you could share some examples of success or lack of success in strategic digital communication, if you have any.
Sure. Yeah. No, of course. And as we know, I have to maintain client confidentiality, so I won't be able to provide any specific names. But, you know, I've worked with clients that got involved in online in creating an employer choice platform and sort of appealing to, you know, new recruits to position the company as an attractive place to work. So, you know, they, again, we went to where the audiences were and communicated with them in a manner using that digital channel in a way that they would, the message would resonate with them. You know, I've also helped clients use, particularly because I specialize in risk and issues management, is how to navigate through the online platforms and ensure that they are involved in the conversation so that the conversation isn't taking place without them. And there is a level of accountability required. There's a level of vulnerability required. You know, apologies have to mean something. Accountability has to take on significance. So I think there are ways in which to do this. But many times you are playing a longer game. And we say reputation needs to be earned and won every day, right? So I think that's another important piece when you're thinking about strategic digital communications.
Quite so. Now, when you're implementing a communication strategy, what might be some of the challenges? I mean, some examples I can think of would be resistance from management, not having enough budget and lack of required resources?
All of the above. Okay. You know, I think that those are key points you brought up, and they're really important points, because that's why exactly why you need to start with a facilitated working session as an example. Yes, it's going to be a frustration to your executives, you know, like, oh my goodness, Shafiq's asking me to give up, you know, 3-4 hours of my day. I'm such a busy executive. But it is well worth it. You know, I, in my agency roles with my colleagues, have undertaken a number of these facilitated sessions. And between facilitated sessions and other things like media training, you're really opening up the eyes of the executives to the fact that, wow, there needs to be a cohesive, consistent, sustainable communication strategy. And that's why when you think of yourself as a newsroom and you build out that cadence, your social content calendar, your regular content calendar. I mean, there is one example of a client of mine, full transparency. I don't do their social, but they have hired an amazing community manager, and the company's called Be Clean Building Maintenance. They're one of Canada's largest janitorial services company, been in business 50 plus years. And, you know, if somebody wants to see their social content in action, should go on LinkedIn and follow them, because they have done an amazing job of ensuring that the content is not only out there, that it is sustainable. But all of that starts, Raj, with your point about, you know, getting sort of alignment, overcoming resistance. And then when you talk about budget, this is the classic problem, right? The $64,000, $64 million question. It's always, you know, communications is seen as a cost center. And I think that, you know, communications has worked hard to get a seat at the executive table. And now we need to continue to demonstrate and prove our worth. We have more data now that connects reputation with information, right? And or communications resulting in a business impact. So I think that has certainly helped. You know, The Economist had a quote, and I'm paraphrasing, if oil and gas was the currency of the 20th century, information and data is the currency of the 21st century, right? And so we're here where, you know, how do we take all that data, all that analytics, and demonstrate that, yes, there is a business impact here? And then finally, like you said, the lack of required resources. Many communications departments aren't fully staffed. But, you know, there are ways to overcome that. Of course, I have a bias when I say that a communications team should look at hiring a PR agency if they don't have enough internal resources. But the agency can act as an extension of their team. And be the trusted guardian, or you justify internally for, you know, more hires. Like, I think having an in-house community manager, just like Be Clean does, fabulous, because that person needs to be on it all the time. And this is what this individual has done.
Right, and that was a very poignant quote that you put out, you know, that information and data are the currency of the 21st century. And now on a different note, We're seeing the rise of artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, with the use of bots to manage interaction with various publics, most visibly customers. If you go on a website, you'll probably have a chatbot pop up and ask you to go through some basic interactions and functions. So what are your thoughts about the human aspect of communication? Will humans still be relevant in 10 to 15 years, or not?
Very fascinating area of discussion. And well, of course, my self-survival intended and my bias, I hope you're relevant in 10 to 15 years. But, you know, I liken it, correctly or incorrectly, this is my opinion only, but I liken it to interactive voice response. You remember when, you know, we thought voicemail and an interactive voice system would be so great, yeah. It would help customers. And what did it do? There was an adverse, almost an allergic reaction from members of the public. It's like, I do not want to be in voicemail hell. And, you know, we've sort of found our way back to, hopefully not completely, there's still a lot of IVR, but I think many organizations have kind of gone back to having live operators respond and answer your question. You know, I just called a gutter services cleaning company. I need my gutters cleaned. And we had just an amazing conversation. As short as it was, she asked me the salient questions. I gave her hopefully the right answers. She's sending me a quote. I'll review the quote and sign off. And, you know, they'll come next week and they'll get it done. And, you know, if it was IVR, I would have had to press a few buttons, wait. I don't know anybody who likes hold music. Oh, I mean, there are a few, you know. So, but to answer your question more centrally, it is an interesting opportunity to have artificial intelligence. There are media outlets now that are, you know, sort of finding their foot in this ground. They're exploring with this and trying to see if it would work. So there could be great opportunity, but again, I think it's the same thing with video calls and Zoom. Right, we achieved fatigue in the pandemic for video calls. We want that we crave that human interaction. Economies are reopening up now. Networking conferences are being organized. Networking luncheons are being scheduled. So I think that there is a required balance. The human element matters, but we can certainly leverage artificial intelligence alongside it. I don't think in replacement of.
Okay, that's very reassuring to hear, because I was wondering, if humans become irrelevant, then does public relations itself become irrelevant, you know, because then it's just bots communicating with bots and humans are completely removed. But you're painting a very optimistic picture, so I'm hopeful.
So am I. I mean, don't call me in 20 years and try and quote me on this. I'll deny everything I said. But, no, but joking aside, that was just a joke. But joking aside, I think, you know, yes, I don't, you know, I think the death of PR is greatly exaggerated. You know, news media has had to evolve. PR and communications will have to evolve. But, you know, I, and full transparency, of course, I used to work at Edelman, but Edelman has done a great job with their trust barometer. It's been in existence, you know, 20 years plus now. And year after year, we see the fact that the public, there is this need for responsibility, accountability, credibility, trust and engagement, you know, which are all needed. And this is what the public, the everyday citizen is looking for. And I think that will not die. It will have to evolve, as will the practice and the discipline itself. You know, and if I can, I mean, you know, at least from what I'm seeing from the media reports, you know, I don't have any particular insight, but it looks like Mr. Musk, you know, upon acquiring Twitter, sort of wants to get rid of these trolls and bots, right? And it'll be interesting to see what they can do with this. But it's hopefully a step in the right direction.
Yes, yes, certainly. So jumping off that, what are some other trends you see in communication management today? I mean, AI is one we just discussed, but are there others that you would point out, please?
Yeah, I think there is the need to look at activism in a different lens. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we need to move past and beyond the shock value impact, like the Save the Old Growth Forests movement. You know, I think it was a month or two ago, and I'm just reporting what I'm seeing or hearing. But, you know, they protested on the Lionsgate Bridge here in Vancouver. And all it did was cause a huge amount of irritation amongst the everyday public who couldn't get to work, who were frustrated, you know, and the reactions. One of our local radio, all news radio stations, tried to sort of do streeter interviews. And, you know, this is, I mean, it's not scientific per se, but I think it's enough to show that people were so irate. And then they talked to one of the spokespeople of the movement, the Save the Old Growth Forest movement. And there was acknowledgement that they didn't intend to frustrate the public, but they inadvertently did. So I think the days of shock value activism should, if they haven't already, they need to go away. We need to have a civilized, reasonable dialogue between the company and the organization and the activism entity. Because another area that's on the rise, Raj, is employee activism. You know, employees want to now work for organizations that take a stand on issues. They do not want to the organization to sit idly by. So whether businesses and corporations and other organizations like it or not, they're going to have to get involved in societal issues. So I think activism is definitely one of those areas. Another area is what we call third-party validation. You know, if I was sitting in front of you, Raj, I would sort of, you know, whiteboard on the left. I'm just talking in general principles, but on the left, I would put 20% and I'd put an X. Those would be the critics. No matter what you do, you're never going to change their mind. They are entrenched in their point of view. On the right side, you generally have another 20%. They're your evangelists and your ambassadors. But what's the problem with them? The problem with them is they're seen as biased. If you look at the trust barometer data, you'll see that, yeah, you know, the boards, if you're in an oil and gas or some sort of business sector and you have the boards of trades and the chambers of commerce is all supporting you, yeah, sure, the public's going to expect them to do that. They're going to say, well, I don't really trust you because you're biased in favor. So then you have the middle. You got the 40% and the 20%, either undecided or neutral. And you've probably heard this. We call this the swayable middle. And if we're going to sway the middle, those people who are so time-strapped that they can't show up to a town hall meeting in support of your development proposal, as an example, you're going to have to communicate to them, not just yourself, but you're going to want to have other validators, you know, influencers. My daughter's 15, you know, I'm paying for cable, but no one's actually watching cable.
Yeah.
Right? She watches YouTube. And she watches influencers, right? These influencers who are, you know, by the way, quite well compensated, I must say. But there are art influencers. There are product influencers. I mean, influencers is becoming this new occupation. And so, you know, even at in my old place, Weber Shandwick, we, you know, went down the path of working with many of these influencers, engaging them to provide that added validation. And finally, doing so in a way in which we are leveraging the credibility to create an emotionally resonant story with the end user.
Okay. Very fascinating. Could I also perhaps request your thoughts on the rise of postmodernism and cancel culture? It goes back to what you were saying earlier, where you don't have context. It's very one-sided, right? How does that factor into strategizing communication?
It's one of the uphill challenges that we now have in the occupation, in the profession. You know, it is, there isn't a lot of time. Organizations that don't quickly act will be skewered, you know, and they'll see some significant impact to their reputations. You know, there was an example here. I believe the lady's name was Chelsea Poorman. She was an indigenous lady who unfortunately, I think, was killed and her body wasn't found. It was in the Shaughnessy neighborhood and wasn't found until a year after or something to that effect. And there was, I guess, a gentleman that there were posters put up on these light poles, if you will. They were asking for anybody with information on this issue to contact the police. Anyhow, this one gentleman decides to walk down a street and starts to strip off these posters. And I guess somebody decides to film him and starts to query him and he doesn't respond. And the real estate brokerage that he was working with, this happened on a Saturday, and by Monday morning they had let him go.
Okay.
You know, and I think the problem, I see the challenge I have here is that on one hand, as a crisis and issues practitioner, yes, we have to respond, because if we don't, you know, and sadly, look at Hockey Canada. I don't follow North American sports, but man, did they ever dig in their heels? And, you know, this became worse and worse and worse. And then when the funding got pulled, you know, and it was interesting. I would love to sit down with Tim Hortons and Canadian Tire and those companies and say, what made you arrive? When did you arrive at this point where you said, you know, enough's enough? And I bet you a lot of it will have to do with the fact that they just saw Hockey Canada digging in its heels instead of saying, we're sorry, you know, we take accountability, we take responsibility. And I think that these funders and sponsors probably got to the point where they're saying, look, this is tone deaf. We need to cancel our funding or pause it or do whatever we need to do. And so that we aren't wearing this. So there's the aspect of speed and the necessity of fast response. On the other side, because we don't have chances around context, I think that there sometimes may be an uphill task where there is a reason to dig in your heels legitimately. Then you've got to find ways to engage with those folks who are looking for cancel culture and determine how it is that you communicate with them and you get past the obstacles and the barriers, and that they are really listening to what your premise is. And hopefully by listening, they then move to understand your company's position, your product, your organization's position as relevant.
Okay. And our final question, would you have any parting thoughts or advice for strategic communication practitioners?
Yes, this is an exciting time to be in PR. It's a great time when you want to use your brain. Don't be an order taker. Be a strategic counselor. You know, many times you will have clients that just come to you and say, Raj, I want you to do ABC, and you end up just doing it. And I think that that's wrong. We bring a particular type of counsel and expertise or knowledge to the table, and we need to demonstrate to the clients that maybe there are alternative courses of action. So it's a great time to get into the industry. Secondly, read. Still matters. Read everything from, you know, The Economist to GQ or Vogue or Cosmopolitan, whatever it's called. And write. Writing will always be a key strength. So you have to, you know, I have a course I teach at one of the local colleges here, and I have a business student, and she is super keen and she does really well. She's improving her business writing so much in leaps and bounds. And I told her it's going to hold her in great stead when she graduates. So that's what I would leave your listeners with.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for a very informative, candid and captivating and philosophical conversation about strategic communication management. I'm very grateful for your time, Mr. Jamal.
Hi, thank you, and I'm very grateful that you gave me the opportunity to do so.
We were in conversation with Mr. Shafiq Jamal, Principal of Jamal Communications in Canada. You can reach him at jamalcommunications.com. I'm Raj Chandran, Executive Director of Verifluency Communication in Calgary, Canada. You can connect with both of us on LinkedIn. All copyrights of this podcast are owned and preserved by Verifluency Communication Incorporated. No part of this podcast may be republished or redistributed in any form or by any means without express permission from Verifluency. Please direct inquiries to contact@verifluency.com. That's Victor Echo Romeo Alpha, Foxtrot Lima Uniform Echo, November Tango India.com.